Good morning, fanatics, or good afternoon, I guess, by the time you're listening to it. This is another episode of Two Shades of Gray. As always, Two Shades of Gray is brought to you by our good friends at heartlandflagpoles.com. Check them out. Go to their website. Hook yourself up with an Iowa State flag. Or we got baseball season coming up. Get yourself your favorite flag. The Braves are, you know, they've been down a couple of the past years, but they're about ready to come around and be where they were in the 90s.
What the hell are you talking about? It's Cubs all the way, buddy.
Cubs had their one shining moment, and I was happy for you as a Cub fan and all the other Cub fans I know. But, you know, now it's time for the Braves to go back to their rightful place atop the National League.
That's just, like, straight out of nowhere. You know, the Braves for a year. And nobody said last year, oh, but this is the last year of the rebuild. This is when everything comes together.
They're still in rebuild. If I'm being truthful to you and the audience and myself here, the Braves, they're not going to suck as much as they did last year, but they're going to struggle. And hopefully there's a light at the end of the tunnel, kind of like there has been for the Cubs, you know, starting back, 2 years ago. So I know everyone tuned in once again to hear us talk about baseball.
But and the Braves and the Braves of all teams.
Well, you know, it's America's team.
Yeah.
You know, grow up watching TBS, my boy Terry Pendleton.
When they were on TBS all the time.
They were, gosh.
Now they're hardly on at all.
My parents would leave me in the summer to go to their jobs, and I would just sit there and watch Wheel of Fortune. Or not Wheel of Fortune. I'd watch, I'm drawing a blank. What was the Bob Barker? Price is Right. I'd watch Price is Right, and then I'd watch Braves. That's what I did in the summer. It's great.
You know, it was Skip Carey. He loved Chipper Jones so much that once he marveled at the way he was able to catch a foul pop fly at third base. He really did.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, Chipper is the best. Yeah. Best third baseman of all time.
They had a good crew. I'm thinking about my Cubs flag. I'm thinking about maybe a garden flag. They got a huge selection of garden flags.
They do have some garden flags there. And if you're a big NBA fan, too, you got NBA playoffs coming. Check out Heartland Flags. They got everything you could want. Or you can always stop into their showroom there at 3719 Southwest 9th Street in Des Moines. Rob, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I appreciate you coming here to do this morning. I know you got a busy day ahead.
I always like to see the teepee.
You like that?
Teepee, yep.
Yeah, so my wife got that for Owen. She thought it'd be nice for him to go into that little teepee and read books.
Yep.
You know how many times he's ever been in there?
One.
Maybe two.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe twice.
That's a shame.
Any parents listening know exactly what I'm talking about. How many times do you buy your kid a toy or some sort of gift and you get all excited about it and they love it for a day or 2 days and then they never use it again? And all it does is take up spots in your house.
Yep. But you're hopeful. It's like it's a sign of hope and despair at the same time. It's like, I really thought this was going to be something great. Yeah. Nothing. But maybe it'll, you know, maybe it'll happen.
Yeah. Maybe when he gets just a little older and he can read. He's only four now, so he loves books, but he can't read himself. And that's not a very big teepee. I'm not fitting in there with him.
Yeah, you have to sit there, you know, cross-legged.
Yeah.
You know. He could meditate in there.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if my four-year-old's really got the meditating down yet, but we'll work with him on that. Hopefully soon he can do it. But, yeah, I appreciate you pointing out the teepee. My wife was really proud of that gift.
Oh, I've been there. How about every Christmas were you? And we'll get to meteor stuff.
Oh, yeah. We got plenty
of
time.
You buy the toy that you're like, man, when I was a kid, I would have loved this.
Yep.
And the kid looks at it.
Cool.
Sees an empty box and starts playing with the empty box.
Yep.
And the empty box will end up getting cumulatively more attention than that toy that you kind of wanted to play with secretly yourself, too, at the same time with the kid because you thought it was so cool.
If you go in my room over here, the kids' playroom,
it's
just littered with toys. It's just disgusting. The only toys I really enjoy playing with, I'll move the furniture around here a little bit. We'll have Nerf fights. Mm. Now, that's where it's all about.
Like the Nerf guns?
The Nerf guns and stuff. I love shooting my kids in the face with it. I'm just, you know, just pegging them.
If you give them safety glasses at least, you
Heck
don't
knock
no. their eye out.
Toughen up, fellas. It's go time. We have a good time when we do that. So today is Iowa State's Pro Day, and I don't know when we're going to be able to get this podcast posted. Some people listening might be listening to it after all the results are shown, and be looking at it on CycloneFanatic.com. I know you're going to be up there covering it.
Yep, I'll be writing something, I think, for tomorrow.
Jared back, be writing some stories on it. I think, is our full team up there? Krogh's doing some videos?
I believe he is going to be there for Pro Day, yes.
This is, I mean, Cyclone Fanatics bringing out the big guns for Pro Day here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is nice. We're able to do this now because basketball season's over, right? So you don't have so many people all over the place. Hey, you cover women's basketball, men's basketball, football. We're locked in right now to football.
Absolutely, yeah. It's, you know, you'd rather not be, but...
No, yeah, we'd rather be flying down to Arizona right now.
Yeah, but Pro Day's... it's always a fun deal, and got some interesting guys there. I mean, Damon Tucker, what can he show? Justin Thomas, those are the two guys I'm going to be focusing on because of their development and just the intriguing. You know, Tucker's got the size issue, you know, in terms of height. Thomas has all those measurables that, you know, and athleticism that you think could translate into something. You know, how many of these guys get drafted? Does one of these guys get drafted? Do two? Anybody there at the Pro Day today, I think, what is it, 10, 11 guys?
11 guys.
I'd say it's likely maybe nobody does.
Yeah.
But I would really like to see what, say, a Justin Thomas could do in a free agent camp. And I know NFL people have their eyes on him.
So I'll just read the 11 guys real quick. Chandler will be there. Creer, Daly, DeAndre Daly, Fett, Jollis, Jay Jones, Patrick Scoggins, Justin Thomas, Nigel Tribune, Damon Tucker, and Jamal Wiltz. Those are Iowa State's 11 players. I think there's a couple that are interesting here to just look for. First is Wiltz. What's Wiltz going to run in the 40? The kid can fly.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to test very well as far as the vertical, 40-yard dash. What's killing him is he's just not a very – he's not very big. I think they list him at 5'10". They're probably going to – when they measure him, he'll probably be a little bit shorter than that on the smaller end. Does he get a look? Does he show up at a camp? That one surprised me just because he does bring some athleticism to the table.
Yep.
Tucker. I think Tucker for a, you know, speed wise is very good. Once again, he's small though. He's a 5'11", 6 foot nose guard.
Yep.
You know, how is an NFL team going to take a chance on him? I don't know, but I bet as far as how he grades out on a lot of like the speed and stuff, I think he'll do very well. And then another guy who's just a little bit undersized, but I think, you know, is intriguing is Scoggins.
Yeah.
You know, as far as a guard goes, what is he, 6'1", 6'2"? He's not he's not what you see anymore, a lot of these 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", guards.
Yep.
But he obviously had a very good year coming back from an injury. So those are the three I'm really interested to see because, you know, Justin Thomas, size-wise, he's – I bet you – it would not surprise me if Thomas gets selected in the 6th or 7th round. You know –
he's the guy that I think if anyone's going to be drafted, it would be him because the team has ID'd him based on film that look at that type of talent.
Yeah.
Think what we can do when we've got him in a camp here learning our system and techniques and everything else.
And he was very good towards the end of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, he came in late. It's really no different. David Irving comes in raw, barely played football in high school. We had to play him as a true freshman. We started to see what he could be as a junior, and then he unfortunately got kicked off the team as a senior. Now you're looking at for the
deservedly so.
Debatable. If we're talking about the incident with the girlfriend, yes. If we're talking about the incident with the stop sign, come on.
I think it was more incidents involved with the team.
Well, but they did it right in the time when he was holding a stop sign, which to me, all he was doing was trying to help other people. Once that stop sign came down, he picked it up and moved it out of harm's way so nobody could get hurt by
it. That's a good point.
That's the way I looked at it, and that's the way I would have spun it if I was a football coach. But Paul Rhodes thought differently, and I think Stephen Leith might have stepped in and said something differently there. But Rob, you know damn well if he played for another university, they would have spun it that way.
Yeah, somebody – yeah, who? What university?
A lot of Kansas basketball would have spun it differently. I promise you that.
That's likely. you could spin it out, but I mean, that was a last straw situation.
Yeah.
I think that was where they felt they couldn't do it. Either way,
it's like
wish him well. I always enjoyed interviewing the young man, and great for him to be doing what he's doing with the Cowboys. And I think it's a fair comparison because Thomas is in that same mold of that freak athlete.
Who's large.
Yeah, and it's gotten better, you know, came with the basketball background, like you said. So that would be that'll be pretty cool to watch to see, A, whether he gets drafted. If he doesn't, you know a lot of teams are vying for his services.
He'll be in a camp.
Yeah,
he'll be in a camp.
So,
yeah, and, I mean, shoot, Irving was one of the best defensive linemen in the league last year for the Cowboys. He was defensive player of the week, I think, 1 week. I mean, that's – I don't think anybody saw that coming. I thought he was a very good player for Iowa State. I thought his best football was ahead of him, but I didn't see that kind of impact in the NFL. Dondre Daley, this is a kid that showed up at Iowa State as a 17-year-old, I want to say. I mean, he was really young. I mean, he was maybe the youngest player to ever show up to play at Iowa State. And, you know, then he kind of – I think he kind of had a couple bruises and nicks of the last year. But he's got good size. He's got good athleticism. I'm interested to see kind of what happens with him today, where he grades out, and if he gets a look at a camp. Because, I, you know, like I said, he's still young, even though he was a fifth-year senior.
Yeah.
He's only 21, 22 years old. Those are the guys I'm really interested to see. And I don't know. I always take the pro day a little bit with a grain of salt, though, because the 40 times are always about a 0.1 second faster than they are at the combine. Mm-hmm. You know, the ones you can't really change. I mean, bench press, that is what it is. Vertical pretty much is what it is. So, I don't know. I'm excited. Hopefully, as years go on, this pro day becomes bigger and bigger. Iowa State has more players that are NFL caliber, because obviously that means better things for the program. And instead of 11, maybe these 11 guys, one, two, three or four of them are walk-ons. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, in the future, 11 of these guys are seniors that legitimately have a chance of either getting drafted highly or middle of rounds or being a pro camp or being in a camp. So, yeah. Anything do you get asked questions to players afterwards, or do you get to interview them when they're done?
Yeah, we interview them after. Like I said, I'm really interested in the defensive line angle, particularly Thomas, but also Tucker.
Because
he's an intriguing case. And like you said, there are a lot of ways I think he grayed out well, but there's, you know, we're going to get to a basketball list that we're putting together here shortly. That there's sometimes that outside force looks at that ceiling in one way, like a measurable, like 6 foot, 5'11", not tall enough to play in the league, just not tall enough. You know, you've seen that with at least one Iowa Stater that never got a shot at the NBA that might be popping up on a list here. You know. You wish all these guys well. I think it's great to see the walk-ons in there competing for it and kind of seeing them. Because you never really know what's going to happen. Another fun thing about Pro Day is occasionally you get this wild card showing up that's like, what the heck? Like when what's-his-face that had been at Iowa and went to Morningside ends up at Iowa State's Pro Day.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why. I'm totally blanking.
The running back.
I'm totally blanking on his name.
He was a good running back for Iowa as a freshman, and then he got kicked off the team, and then he went to Oklahoma for a week or two before he got kicked off the team.
And then ended up Morningside.
I think he's actually still in the NFL as far as on like a on the practice squad somewhere. Brandon Wager. That's right.
Yep.
I know people that are listening were yelling his name, Brandon Wager, you idiots, Brandon Wager, say his name. Yeah, they got it.
They had a guy that went to one of the – you know, like a co or something, and ends up over there. And he had an interesting backstory for how he's there at Pro Day at Iowa State. You know, so those are nice little.
You're talking about Fred Jackson?
Too. No. Well, I don't know. Maybe back in the day. Who knows?
But isn't it crazy that Fred Jackson, as great of an NFL career as he had, came from co?
It is.
In transitioning off into that, and I apologize, this is actually take two for us, Rob. We're 13 minutes into this podcast, but that's to the people listening. For me and you, we were actually 40-some minutes into this podcast. It was the greatest podcast of all time. Some of the stuff that was said will never be able to be repeated or redone. But unfortunately, for whatever reason, the hardware decided to quit recording, and we caught it. We caught it now. So we're going to go through this a little bit faster because you got to get up to pro day.
Yep.
And it's going to be a little shorter podcast. I apologize to everyone. Like I said, this was the greatest podcast of all time, unfortunately.
We might be able to, in a condensed manner, we might have a Cliff's Notes version of the greatest.
Hey, when I was in high school.
The Ghost in the Machine clearly disagreed with how great it was. It decided to just tune out.
Just stop recording.
Son of a gun!
When I was in high school and college, Cliff Notes are what I lived off of. So I think a lot of people are going to appreciate this. Before we talk about our top 10 football or football basketball lists, just want to point out, as everyone probably knows by now, Khalil Rogers, the grad transfer from USC that committed to Iowa State, is now decommitted and is switched over to North Carolina. Rob has been saying some not so nice things about the guy off the air.
Just for fun.
Just
that son of a gun.
Now,
perhaps with a little different verbiage.
Yeah, maybe a word that we definitely can't say on here. But no, you know, tough loss for the program. Reminds us a lot of the Tyler Cantilena. I think he's a better player than Cantilena. I think Cantilena is more important just because of the lack of depth that we had last year, which I think we still have not enough depth in the offensive line, but it is in a better spot than it was last year. So I think you're going to go from seeing maybe an above average line to an average line. I still think it's going to be good offense, but this is a hit, Rob. There's no way to sugarcoat it. It's a little bit of a knock for the offensive line.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you can't begrudge the guy. I mean, as long as you have the opportunity to reconsider, you can reconsider, and he's probably got a lot of reasons that we don't know about.
Yeah, I think he's closer to family.
Yep. Strictly from my Iowa State perspective,
which is all we care about.
It is a hit, but Manning has worked wonders with some guys that people didn't think would contribute, even in year one. I'll keep the faith there that there are some guys that are going to maybe come out of nowhere and help solidify this line.
Okay. So now that we've hit on Pro Day, we've hit on Khalil Rogers, let's transition. Let's have a little fun. This is going to be a quicker version because Rob's got to get up to Pro Day, and we've already done it once. So we have two lists here. One, top 10 most dominant or the best players in Iowa State since 1990. And I'll throw this out there beforehand. For me, it's more like 93. Because I was born in 85.
Yep.
If a player played 90, 91, 92, I don't really remember it a whole lot. 93, it even gets a little hairy, but I do remember, and I've seen enough replays of it. And then we're going to do that list, and then we're going to do another list, top 10 most impactful players at Iowa State during the same time period. Why don't you start first, and you go through your top 10 list.
Yeah.
You go 10 through 5.
And I'll go, again, my caveat is that if this had just been all-time greatest talents at Iowa State, I think we interpreted the list. I saw the word dominant in there, so I wanted to definitely work in some guys who I considered dominant.
You're thinking like Shaq.
And
you think dominant.
Some big guys that really, gobbled up the rebounds and all that, which is why I put Jarrett Holman at number 10 on my dominant list. He was so – I mean, he was just a jerk in a good way. The guy that would tangle with anybody for a teammate, for himself, stood up for himself constantly. Got in there, mixed it up, and produced as well. Nice career overseas. Interesting guy. Was fun to do a Where Are They Now on him a number of months ago. And in terms of an imposing figure, which I have sprinkled in throughout this list, imposing figures and just great players, he's definitely among the great intimidators that Iowa State's had in that time frame.
All time leading block, had the most blocks in Iowa State history. So he not maybe the best scorer, not maybe the most efficient, but he was tougher than nails. Who's your number 9?
My number 9 is Fred Hoiberg.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. And I already yelled at you once for this on the pre-recorded version of this podcast, but this to have the mayor anything not in the top 5 is disrespectful. It needs to be called out for that.
Okay, that's fine. Obviously, if it were all-time greatest Cyclones, people with the program, Fred would be number 1. Might be in a different way, but great. We know great scorer. We know his numbers. Got some steals as well. Had a nice NBA career. Fantastic as a coach here. Resurrected the program. But I just have him as 9, just because. Again, I have that mix of imposing guys, and to be fair, I put together this list pretty hastily. I'm not stinging from your criticism. I understand it.
Well, my criticism is fair. Yeah. It's we're talking about one of the all-time leading scorers in Iowa State history. Okay, who's your number 8? I'm bringing up his stats here in a little bit. So,
yep. Go ahead. Loren Meyer, Fred's teammate, great scorer as a junior. Had the train accident, or the car accident with the train. Ended up having a very nice had some nice moments in the NBA. And a guy that could be both dominant, had that imposing aspect, but also just be really smooth with the basketball around the rim. Why Loren Meyer right out of Fred? I guess because the list is, I'm trying to balance that thing, and Fred wasn't in the imposing category. So I got Loren Meyer as my number 8.
Loren Meyer ahead of Fred, as good as Loren was, that's a joke, and you should feel bad about it, Rob.
Okay.
All right. Who you got number 7?
Monte Morris. another guy that doesn't fall into that imposing category, except in the sense that he imposes will on games very efficiently and seasons, you know, four seasons of it. Just incredible efficiency, as we know, is demonstrated. I don't know if anybody will ever be better in that assist to turnover ratio, NCAA wise, record wise. And just a guy whose mentality was, I mean, just so steely. I mean, he was as rock solid as he could become. Then he became a guy that had that dominant shot maker. He developed that and became that guy down the stretch, particularly his senior season. So I've got him in at number seven.
Okay. Number six.
Number six, I got Big George Niang. Another guy that it's hard to believe it was two seasons ago, because he was so much the face of the program and the, sort of the identity of the program, and all the joking and all the great performances. He kind of epitomized Iowa State for 4 years, and we, you know, right there with Fred in so many statistical categories all time. Didn't really have that imposing element to him, so he's just kind of populating the list here. But again, if you were going to all-time greatest Cyclones, if that were the definitive category, he'd be top two probably.
Okay. And number five, and then I'll go through my 10 through five.
Number five, Jamal Tinsley, you know, just an incredible point guard. As we know, you know, it wasn't always measured in every single stat. But as you mentioned when we first went through, it's just a wizard with the basketball and the way he could defend. Mm-hmm. I mean, the steals, I mean, you had to work for everything you got against him. And obviously an Elite Eight team, it's just such a high performing talent at Iowa State, puts him at number five here.
Okay. So that's your list. Now I'm going to give you the correct list. Okay. I'm going to give you the list, the Heartland Flagpoles list, the one that they would want to be sponsored.
Okay.
Okay. And you're saying
they wouldn't like Jared Holman.
I'm saying they would like Jared Holman as maybe an honorable mention.
Okay.
You know, but, I'm saying, you know, this is what's fun here. And I want people that are listening to this podcast, I want you to either get on Cyclone Fanatic, and we'll put our lists on there. Tell us where we're wrong. Tell us what your list would be. This is what's fun. This is what you do at the bar with your buddies, right? You sit there and you argue, and nobody's really right or wrong, but you act like you're right or wrong. Like you argue to the death on this stuff, even though there's no real way of ever knowing. I mean, and I talked about this before too, Rob. Someone that played for Fred or someone that played for Johnny Orr is going to have much better offensive stats typically than what we saw under Tim or Larry, where they are more slowed down tempo defense kind of guys, right? And so if you're looking and you're just doing a comparison straight off of offensive numbers, you can't really do a comparison. So I think we got to take everything with a little bit of you got to look at it different ways here. My number 10, Curtis Stinson. I mean, and Curtis, numbers-wise, could be a lot higher in this list. I mean, he came in as a freshman scoring 16 points a game. Yep. Finished his career, though, as a junior, 19 points per game, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 2.4 steals. Dominant. The one thing that you can knock him for, only made the tournament one out of 3 years. But he'd be number 10. I think he's kind of one that people forget about a little bit. Number 9 for me, Royce White. Royce, if you're looking at just a strictly talent standpoint, I think you can make a case he's top 3 for Iowa State. Everything he could do, he could do everything on the court. But for a lot of times during that 1 year he was at Iowa State, he maybe wasn't as dominant as he could have been. He averaged 13 points per game, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. Like I said, he could do everything. And where he gets a lot of credit is he was the one that kind of got Iowa State back on the map. Hadn't been in the tournament in 5-6 years. Comes in, they go to the tournament right away that year. Royce White's my number 9. Number 8 for me, Craig Brackens. 5-star recruit. Played on bad teams. Never went to the NCAA tournament. Never went to the NIT. The guy could score. And he could do it with every team knowing that he was the only guy really for many part of the year that was skilled for Iowa State to score.
Yeah.
Dropped 42 against Kansas. Could have gone pro after a sophomore. Stuck around. Went as a junior. Was a first-round draft pick. From a skill set standpoint, he was about as good as we've seen, but people don't quite think of him as highly as some of these other guys because Iowa State lost when he played. Number 7, Loren Meyer. I know you had him. I think you had him 8.
Yep.
You had him 8. So we're right about the same there. Loren, before the train injury, as a junior was averaging 23 points, 9 rebounds a game. I mean, think about that, Rob. That's remarkable. Granted, those were 12 games in the non-conference.
Sure.
Competition was going to get a little tougher, might have slowed him down a little bit. But still, he came back the next year after – I think he was still having back injuries, back issues his junior year.
Definitely.
Averaged 16 and 8, I want to say. Still had a great year. Got drafted in the first round. And then my number six here is Calvin Cato.
Kelvin.
I believe I'm saying Kelvin. I think I just maybe not pronounce. I don't know. Whatever. Kelvin's one of those guys, you look at his offensive numbers, he wouldn't be on the top 10 of this list. I think he scored 9 points a game, 8 rebounds. Good, not great.
Yeah.
His impact, though, was on defense. I mean, everybody around him was better on defense because they had Cato behind him. He could push a guy off the three-point line knowing he was back there. So I'm looking at an overall impact. He's only at Iowa State for a year and a half, but for that year and a half, he was dominant. Iowa State.
How many blocked shots in a year and a half?
180.
Just insane. I mean, the best rim protector I've seen in a Cyclone uniform by far.
By far, yeah. Yep, by far. And think about that, 180. I bet you if you go back the last 5 years, Iowa State hasn't had 180 combined as a team. I'm serious, Rob. I mean, this year we couldn't have had many blocks, could we? I'm going to pull that up right now. Let's see how fast I can do this. But Iowa State, I mean, you're not going to get a Calvin Cato again.
Kelvin.
I'm saying Calvin Cato, aren't I?
I'll let others be the judge. Jeez. Perhaps my ears are as bad as my the number 9 spot.
It's like when I say Xavier, even though I know it's Xavier, I say Xavier, and then people call me out for that as well. Yeah, that's all right. Iowa State block shots this year. They had 124.
Yeah, more than you think.
Still.
You get the few there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah.
Long story short, they don't block many shots. Yep. So, and then my number 5, Monte Morris. Monte, from a dominant standpoint, I don't think he was dominant per se, but he was one of those guys that you'd look at the end of the night, you think, oh, Monte played a decent game. You look at it, 14 points, 7 assists, 4 rebounds, 0-1 at turnover, just solid night after night. From a consistency standpoint, he's number 1 in the list.
Yeah,
he brought it almost every single night. Never had to worry about what he was going to do. And he hit a ton of big shots over his career. I think people forget that sometimes, how many big shots he hit. So that's my 10 through 5. Who do you got? 4, 3, 2, 1.
4, Kelvin Cato. We've talked about him. Short period of time, but again, an imposing and intimidating figure. A guy that people did not want to tangle with. And again, I've got a mix of guys on this list because I thought that was kind of one of the big bases for one of these things. But so I got Cato at 4. I got Royce at 3. We talked about Royce. He was just graceful and yet just strong as a bull, running that point forward thing. I gave a lot of weight to the fact that you mentioned the putting them back on the map thing.
Yep.
You know, without him, that 6-year drought of NCAA tournaments
would have gone
extended.
Another year. Yep.
And he did so many things. He had a triple-double. He did so many things, was so skilled, and part of that team that, you know, hey, we can beat Kansas. You know, that was the return of, hey, you know what, we can beat Kansas.
Yep.
Royce at 3. 2, I've got early 90s, Victor Alexander. Incredible numbers he put up inside, outside, sweet moves, had a really nice NBA career, a lot of it at Golden State, if not all. Tremendous player. I have some of the stats, but he might have averaged 20 his career at Iowa State, and rebounded the basketball, blocked shots, defended. Just a great all-around player that I can remember because I'm an old man. I know you were a very young man when Victor was playing.
I was.
A young boy, as a matter of fact. At the time.
At the time, yeah.
Yeah. And then
you said play defense. No one played defense for Johnny back in the day. Come on.
Even Fred said he never played defense.
No, they didn't play defense back then. Hey, I'm fine with that.
It translated, I guess. I'll say, because he stuck in the NBA. But and number one, and I think it's a no contest kind of here, is Marcus Fizer. You know, Chris Mim will always remember him. As you said, he probably wakes up in the middle of the night sometimes remembering that hammer coming down on him.
Just in a cold sweat.
Yeah.
Screaming.
But, you know, you probably got some of Pfizer's numbers. But, I mean, just always great. Darn near double-digit rebounds. What was he, 8 or 9 rebounds every year that he was there? And, 16, 17, 18 points. You know, just – and as great a finisher around the rim as I've seen at Iowa State, certainly within this time span. So yep. Pfizer numero uno.
Okay. I agree with you on Pfizer. I'll get to that here in a second. First, I left off Victor Alexander, not because I don't recognize him for his greatness, just because I was so young. I don't remember. When he started playing Iowa State, I was 3. When he got done, I was 6. Yeah. For me to sit here and talk to you about Victor Alexander, I mean, all I remember is reading how great he was, to be honest with you. He averaged, by the way, as a senior, 23.4 points and 9 rebounds per game. That is fantastic.
And that's a whole season.
That's a whole season. Yeah, I mean, 31 games, playing 32.9 minutes, too. It wasn't like he was in there for 40. My number 4 is Fred, who you disrespected by putting at number 9. Don't think that Fred's not listening to this podcast right now.
Probably.
Don't think you're not on a shit list now. Okay?
I hope not.
Fred came in not only as a freshman and played well. He scored 12 points per game as a freshman. He did it all 4 years. He shot the ball tremendously well, not only from 3, where he's a 40% three-point shooter, but he shot it well from two-point percentage as well at 56%. He rebounded. He passed. He did it all. Big impact, and obviously had a nice career in the NBA. Number 3 for me is Niang, and you could flip-flop those two, in my opinion. If you look at their stats, it's remarkable how similar they are. Niang averaged 16 points per game, about 5 rebounds as well. He shot the 3 well. The reason I put him a little bit ahead of Niang is for 2 reasons. He went to the tournament all 4 years, where I think Fred went for 3.
Yeah.
And the ball went through George a little bit more. He was a little bit more of a facilitator passing the ball. And just kind of his persona, right? The leader mentality of we're gonna win these games and just kind of get on my back. I try not to look at it as, well, Niang just got done playing and this is fresh in my mind. Yep. I try to step back, and I would still put Niang ahead of him. Number 2, Jamal Tinsley, and I think you could flip Tinsley and Pfizer. They both were as dominant as you get. You look at Tinsley's stats. Tinsley's stats they don't blow you away. They're not even really like Monte's. I mean, he averaged 4 turnovers a game. He had a lot of assists. I'd argue a lot of the turnovers were based on crazy passes that he made. They were awesome passes. Yeah. The guys weren't ready, and they'd go out of bounds. But defensively, he got his hands on all the balls down low. He was a wizard with the ball, was tough as nails. And that team with him won the Big 12 regular season back-to-back years. Never done before. Was a 2-seed. Back-to-back years, Big 12 tournament championships his junior year. Tinsley was as good as we've seen at Iowa State at the point guard position. And then Marcus Pfizer, number 1. McDonald's All-American, 5-star recruit, one of the top draft picks in the draft. As a senior, I believe he scored 23 points per game and averaged 7 rebounds. And he did it, well, efficiently. I mean, he shot 60% from two-point. And I just – there's no one I've watched at Iowa State that – could just flat out dominate, especially at the end of the year. I think he went – didn't he have a streak there where he scored over 30 points in a game, 4 or 5 straight games or something like that? Yeah. So Pfizer, to me, is clearly the number 1. Since we're trying to be quick on this too here, let's just go through. I had some honorable mentions, some guys that were really, really good at Iowa State that sometimes just get forgotten or just maybe barely miss the list.
Yep.
One that could very easily have been on the list, Dedrick Willoughby.
Yeah.
Was great at Iowa State, won a Big 12 tournament championship, and went to the Sweet 16. DeAndre Kane, only here for 1 year, but did it all, points, rebounds, assists. Tyre Pearson, people forget about, was great as a senior, played a horrible team. Marquis Gilstrap, same thing, averaged 18 points, 11 rebounds. I mean, think about that, 18 and 11, and it's not like he was a big guy either. He was, what, 6'6"?
Yeah.
Just a great athlete, strong.
Incredible athlete, yeah.
Had some of the best dunks. You go back and watch some of the dunks he had as a senior. I mean, they were, whew, man, good player. Fortunate that he didn't play on a better team. If he was a grad transfer right now, if Iowa State was able to pick up a Marquis Gilstrap, that would, big time. Wesley Johnson. I would have probably, from a talent standpoint, he's definitely a top 10 player, but he left Iowa State, so F him.
Son of a gun!
that dude could jump. And Mike Taylor. Yeah. Mike Taylor, another one of those guys who got kicked off Iowa State. You never know what he could have been as a senior, but he went to the NBA. Talent-wise, athleticism, whew, that dude could play. So I think those are some guys, and there's a lot of role players that you could put on that list,
too. Yeah, lots of role players from the Elite Eight team, Stevie Johnson, Cantrell Horton. You had some really good scorers, too, like Will Blaylock, Kulius Mikalik, Abdel Nader in his 2 years, particularly his last year.
Yep.
Jackson Vroman was a heck of a player. Paul Shirley, Kenny Pratt. I mean, you could – and again, there are people who are sentimental favorites for some people, too, that would be honorable mentions.
Hey, I was in college when Dedrick Willoughby was there. Man, that guy could shoot. I went to every one of his games, saw him play Dedrick Willoughby top five easy. And you know what? To his defense. And to that I say, you know what? I completely agree. If anyone's going to put J.C. Holloway on the list, I'm banning you from Cyclone Fanatic, all right? J.C. Holloway, he couldn't even have walked on in this last Iowa State team. Just stop it. Stop it.
Why you got to throw shade at J.C.?
I see people talk about that all the time. It's kind of my shtick.
Well, let's move on to our next list.
All right, top 10 most impactful. So not necessarily the best, not the most dominating. People that were here at Iowa State and made a huge, huge impact. I'll start this one.
Okay.
Number 10 for me, Jared Homan, who I did not have on the list before. And the reason I did, because the attitude he brought, we saw the next year when he left – Iowa State was more talented the year after he left, and they still didn't go to the NCAA tournament with Stenson and Blaylock. They struggled. And I think one of the main reasons they struggled, they didn't have that tough SOB down low in Jared Holman. Plus, I'll be honest, Jared Holman was one of my top three all-time favorite players to watch. I love watching him. Number nine, it's going to come as a surprise, Naz Long.
Yeah?
Impactful. At Iowa State for 5 years, made the tournament all 5 years, never lost a Big 12 tournament game, hit some huge threes. And I look at it not only from just a player, because there was a lot of times where Naz struggled on the court for an extended period of time, 3 weeks. But then the next 3 weeks, he was dynamite. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you're looking at just what he did on the court, I don't know if you could necessarily say Naz in the top 10, but I look at what he brought off the court, the leadership, the kind of the glue guy, the motivational guy. I mean, you listen to him speak. That dude's a coach. That dude's a leader. And he did it in the winningest time in Iowa State history. So I put Naz Long number 9. I mean, you could make a case for Matt Thomas there too, but I thought Naz just because of what he brought necessarily off the court as well. So number 8, didn't have him on my list either, but Julius Mikulik. Julius was there for 4 years, made the tournament 3 years, and you look at what he did from the second he stepped on campus. I'm going to pull up the stats here quick. I think people forget this. As a freshman, 12 points. 12 points as a sophomore, 20 as a junior, 14 as a senior. Averaged 5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.5 steals, a block a game. He could shoot the three. He could play inside.
He was the perfect foil for Fred. Not foil, but I mean, the two-man games, they would get going sometimes. Both great passers at time. Mikulik found Fred. I mean, Mikulik was a very, very underrated passer.
He was.
I mean, I know that's often a big element for European guys. They bring that when they come over here. But it was a thing of beauty to watch those guys work together.
He was a stretch four before the stretch four became a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, 6'10", could shoot it. I think he's one of those two. And like I said, when I put this list together, I'm weighting it a little bit more for 4-year players, just to be honest. One guy I didn't have on the list, but he wasn't a 4-year player. Number 7, Dedrick Willoughby, shows up his first year. They go 24-9, win the Big 12 tournament championship. Second year they go to the Sweet 16. He was a scorer on that team. He was the guy you needed a bucket. You went to and he got a bucket. Number 6, we didn't even talk about him on the last list. It's hard to imagine this guy was Big 12 Player of the Year, and I don't list him as one of the top 10. Best, most dominant players at Iowa State, but impactful, Melvin Edgem.
Yeah.
Shows up at Iowa State, commits to Iowa State when they were at their lowest. First year with Fred, struggles, goes to the tournament after that 3 years in a row, Big 12 Player of the Year as a senior. And all that guy did was make plays. And he made plays when it wasn't drawn out for him. He went and willed himself. He worked hard at it. He didn't wait for anything to come to him. He went and got it. I love Melvin Edgem. Melvin Edgem to me is kind of that Jared Holman.
Yeah, and if you're talking all-time greatest Cyclones too, in terms of how he comported himself, how he conducted himself, and everything else, I mean he's way up that chart as well. And he turned himself into a good three-point shooter.
Oh, great!
I mean, he developed his game, all aspects of it so well. The hands got better.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm liking where you're going here.
Melvin Edgem, his last 2 years, his first 2 years, he's 22%. His last 2 years, he's about 35. Yeah, big improvement.
And in big moments, too.
Yeah.
If he needed a three sometimes, hey, it wasn't Melvin's your third, fourth options. It might be Melvin's your first, second option.
Melvin was 6'5", and he averaged his last 2 years 9 rebounds a game. I mean, and he was tough. He had to always guard the bigger guy down low because of the way we played, and he was tough as nails and loved Melvin. He was number 6. Number 5 for me, and you could put him even higher too. I have him in the same spot both places as Monte.
Yeah.
Made the tournament all 4 years. First team All-Big 12 this year, 13 All-American. Great player, great leader, great Cyclone. Who's your 10 through 5?
Yeah, there's some – number 10 is Willoughby. For the impact you mentioned, I mean, those were just a couple of great teams. He did it on both ends. You know, I agree with everything you said about him. Great, great player. And, again, I tried to mix this up in sort of a different way on both lists. I have Brackens at number 9 on impact just because of the
really?
Singular athlete that he was. Not because I didn't look at impact as necessarily season success.
Or you're looking at wins and losses.
Program. Okay. Now, was it a it's an element
of the criteria
throughout either one.
This is
fair. But he was so good, I didn't think I could find space for him on the dominant chart. When I'm picking some imposing guys, that would I say Jared Holman is one of the 10 greatest Iowa State players? Of course not. But in terms of including that imposing part, I wanted to put him on that list. So I definitely wanted to get Brackens in there just because of how good and skilled he was, which as good as anybody, I think, that's played at Iowa State. I have Stinson at 8 on impact.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the stats you mentioned tell the story to some degree, but it's tough. I mean, a bulldog. I mean, he went after those guys. I mean, the steals he got at times, the passes he made at times. Underrated shooter, and it's such a shame he never even got a 10-day in the NBA. Great D-League, led the Iowa Energy to their only title.
Didn't he just have his jersey retired?
Yeah. I mean, he had a reputation that he could not hit the long-range shots, and nobody gave him a 10-day, which is just a shame because I think that would have been a great gift to him. He's had some good seasons overseas as well, but a tremendous player. I have Naz on my impact list as well for the very same reasons you mentioned. I don't know if there's ever been a better spokesperson for Iowa State's program. And the charisma to go with this. I mean, when he was hot, holy cow. And a big play he might make that comes out of nowhere, whether it be a steal. Think about that UConn loss in Sweet 16 when George broke his foot. He almost had that steal tie-up mm-hmm. when they were making a run on him. Who knows what happens if they, you know, if the call goes Iowa State's way.
How about that 3 he hit against Nevada? You know what I mean? When it was looking a little dicey, yep. Starting to sweat a little bit, shot clock running out, and he just chucks it up from up top. And as soon as he shot, I'm sitting right there. I'm looking right at him. Like, I go, holy crap, he made it. He knew. I would like to ask him that someday.
Yeah.
Because it sure looked like he knew the second he let that thing go, yeah. It was going in.
He and Monte and so many other guys in this stretch that we've been on, this renaissance, this golden age, fearlessness and yeah. Just an abiding love for the team, the program, the community. That's what makes that so special. And he epitomized that in a way to me with his words. So I got him at 7.
So, Rob, I hate to cut you off there. Do you think Naz is so much better at this, or do you think it's kind of an element of it's easier for him to be outspoken about Iowa State and get his message out there because of social media? Because he can be on Instagram and Twitter, and it's so what these players are saying is so. It used to be if a player said something, you would wait till the next day in the Des Moines Register before you see it, and there would be just they'd have to kind of condense it. Now the players, they can get their own message out there. Do you think it's easier for guys like Niang and Naz? Do you think they're? I'll reword it. Do you think they're a lot better than what we used to see at Iowa State, or do you think it's just easier for them to get their message out there?
Well, yeah, they're under a much more of a microscope because of also the 24/7 news cycle. Let alone, you know, waiting for the newspaper the next day or the 10 p.m. newscast or whatever.
Sure.
But those guys are born leaders. They're born speakers. They've got wit. They've got confidence.
Yeah. No, I agree with all that.
And eloquence.
Was there any players like them in the 90s when you were covering? Is there anyone that stood out? Was Fred like that in the 90s when you were covering him?
Fred was almost kind of an aw shucks guy. And yeah. I wasn't covering him in the 90s. It got into it. I've been in the business for about 17 years.
Oh, okay. I thought this was like the 30th anniversary.
I did some stuff at the Daily with Pfizer and some. There was charisma there, and there was that confidence. But these guys, there's something. And again, it's recency bias. It is the golden age kind of feeling too. I have the same 5-6 for you, except I flipped them. I got Monte at 6, obviously on both lists. I mean, you know, don't really have to say a whole lot more about that. And Melvin at 5, which I think speaks for itself, too. One of the all-time greatest. Talk about a great spokesperson. I mean, he had the incident of the bird.
The BYU game?
You know what? I don't blame him in that game. But otherwise, just every single second was class with him and grit. I mean, if you want to talk about a gritty guy, getting everything he could, you mentioned the rebounding at
competitor,
his height.
Competed.
I mean, he just went after it to the nth degree constantly. So there's my 10 through 5.
Okay. I like it. My number 4, who was my number 1 on my last list, Marcus Fizer. Fizer obviously came in as a McDonald's All-American, but for the first 2 years, I didn't even go to the NCAA tournament. That's the only thing that's kind of holding him back from maybe being my top guy again on the spot. Now, granted, his junior year was the best year we've had in Iowa State history. I'm not taking that away from him at all. It's the only reason I have him down there at number 4. Number 3, though, was his playing partner, Jamal Tinsley. More impactful from him, his 2 years there were the biggest impact of anybody at Iowa State. I mean, you could have number 1 if he was there for any more than 2 years. 2-seed back-to-back years, NCAA tournament, or won the Big 12 title back-to-back years. And, I mean, you look at that, there's not a better winning percentage guy in Iowa State history than Jamal Tinsley. So it made a huge impact there. My number 2, Fred Hoiberg. And if you actually were going just overall, the biggest impact, I think Fred Hoiberg's the best Cyclone of all time, because you take it into account, you know, he grew up in Ames. Local kid, sticks around, ball boy, sticks around, goes to Iowa State, tremendous career, gets drafted, plays 10 years, and then he comes back, coaches Iowa State for 6 seasons. I think he's the best Cyclone of all time, but as far as impact, as far as playing goes, I'll put him number 2. In number 1, it's fresh, but I'm going George Niang. Took Iowa State to the tournament all 4 years. Was good from the get-go. Like you said, was a great ambassador for Iowa State. Great with the fans. And I think he's one of those guys. I think a lot of people, like Melvin Ejim. When Melvin Ejim got done playing, right away, everyone says, you got to hang his jersey. Yep. I think the further we get away from Melvin Ejim, I think there's still going to be people that think we need to hang his jersey, but I'm starting to hear less of that, and I think it's going to get less and less because, you know, a little bit of that newness wears off. Niang, 5 years from now, if his jersey's not still being hung, people are still going to be like, what the hell?
Yeah.
George Niang's jersey needs to be hung. I mean, this is George Niang we're talking about and the impact he had here. I still say if his foot doesn't get broken his sophomore year, Iowa State's in the Final Four.
No question.
We'll never know.
No question.
We'll never know, but we're huge homers, and that's what we do. So that's my top 10. Who you got?
Okay. Now, I didn't replicate even Fizer 1 and Tinsley 5. I wanted to work a few other guys in. So I viewed the list with the varying criteria, but I got DeAndre Kane at 4. What he did that season and what he did for Monte Morris in particular, when Monte was a freshman, I don't know if enormous impact he had. And you talk about a guy, I know he was 30 years old, wink, not, you know, joke, but he brought a brash and cocky and yet attention to detail, doing the right things, doing the little things, all that stuff in a package. I don't know. I mean, Monte Morris was great coming out of high school. I remember what his coach said about him, floor general, played as a fourth grader with eighth graders, this kind of stuff. I don't know if Monte Morris becomes a player he becomes if DeAndre Kane doesn't come over from Marshall. He put him through, you know, some paces. I mean, he put him through some tough love.
I think he
situations.
Did that for a couple different people.
Yeah. But, I mean, and people react differently to those sorts of things. Monte Morris from the very beginning reacted that spurred him on. And you know, he was so efficient. Remember, he set the record assist turnover ratio that year. He didn't have I just think he was and again, it's fairly early in the grad transfers. Yes, you'd had Lucius, Chris Allen, some of those guys.
Will Clyburn.
Christofferson really was a transfer, even thinking. But
before DeAndre Kane, I'm just going off here. Who was the best transfer of the Hoiberg era?
Well, it had to be Royce White, although he was kicked off the team, wasn't he?
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking of him as a transfer because he came from not playing.
The best one, best performer?
I'd say Clyburn. Yeah.
Lucius did some really nice things, but he was not the same. Clyburn, he was on when he didn't, quote-unquote, crawl into his shell.
Yep.
Like he did against Iowa once and some other games.
Make a case for Babb.
Great, yeah. Yeah, and again, when you consider all the factors.
The defense and everything. Yep.
And talk about ambassador. Mm-hmm. And a guy that just did everything the right way.
He even picked up girls, allegedly.
These basketball players never do that.
No. If they don't, they're doing it wrong.
Yeah, and I include and I have Royce number three here too, because again, maybe I'm giving him too much credit.
So I don't even have Royce on my list here.
That's fine. I think the importance of him being in the program. Fred was able to coach the team the way he wanted to coach them. He wanted to be able to have a big man that he could run that through, because he didn't. How many dominant big men have Iowa State had in this golden era?
Royce White more dominant or more impactful at Iowa State than Monte Morris? How disrespectful.
Because of when he
how dare you?
Because of when he came here. If it goes to 7 years without an NCAA tournament, if he's not there, you know him coming helped attract some things, because it changed the style of play. It did so many things to change the program. I've got George number two, Fred number one. Impact.
So we just flipped him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm perfectly fine with that too.
Do you think I should have Fred lower on impact?
I think you completely disrespected Fred as far as the dominant player, putting him at ninth on the list.
That's because of the word dominant. I told you it's an imposing.
Okay.
So I
okay. So let's take away dominant. Say best players. Just best players. Is he still number nine?
No, I've said so that.
I should have said best then, because
or just most talented. Although then, no, but most talented.
Most talented. I mean, then you get like Wesley Johnson in there.
Wesley Johnson's in there. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So I should have done it best player and most impactful player, because those are two different things.
Yeah.
Melvin Edgen was more impactful than he was the best player.
On the season, as in a great season, or is it impactful in terms of if that person didn't come with it, you know, because they lost to Kentucky in the second round, eventual champion Kentucky in the second round, but still what happened that season set the stage for everything. And arguably even the season before, where they lost all the close games with Garrett and others, that set a stage too.
Yeah.
But this took them to the next stage of which to build, you know, a true reputation for a program that's fun to watch and fun to play for and fun to play against.
I should have worked the criteria out a little bit better before I did this, you know?
There's always wiggle room there.
Yeah.
Because even I'm thinking most talented, well, then you have to include some of those guys that were on losing teams, and then you're leaving off maybe the best player on a team that maybe wasn't quite as gifted athletically.
Yeah.
You know, but I still think we've got a lot of good names. And
if we're talking talented too, one person we haven't mentioned who just got done playing, Deonte Burton, from talent.
And if dominant, if I were just thinking about imposing, although it wasn't always imposing, McKay, particularly especially some of that junior season.
Well, he's Big 12 defensive player of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make a case, and once again, played on a team that had a lot of success. So, Rob, this was fun. This was fun. I can't wait to put this up on the forums and have everyone tell us how stupid we are.
Yeah, especially me.
Well, your Fred at nine is...
Once you get Kelvin... Kelvin, Kelvin, Kelvin.
Kelvin? Is it Kelvin?
Kelvin.
Is it like Washington?
No.
Did your parents ever do that?
It's just L, not Al.
See, I got made fun of a lot as a kid because my parents spoke like this, right? And they used to say, hey, go throw your clothes in the wash.
The wash?
The wash.
Are they from Missouri?
No, they're from Iowa. Okay. I don't know why they do this, but they still do it. I have gotten better because I've been made fun of, but I still mess up. I say Xavier instead of Xavier, and people always make fun of me for that. A lot of times I still say George's, even though I know it's George Neely.
Yeah.
But I actually do that on purpose, because you don't put an S behind your name if you don't want me to say the S.
How did Yorgos not get on our list?
Who?
Yorgos.
Sampouris?
Sampouris?
Jeez.
Hey, yeah. I just wanted to end on a high note.
You know what? Actually, let's do a list next week. The top 10... like most intriguing prospects that everyone forgets about. Like,
yeah. And whether they really were bona fide prospects or just kind of these guys that were these mysterious figures that
Ivan Shiryov. Was it Jerome Harper, one of the big ones too? Wasn't Jerome Harper?
I think so.
Did he even show up? See, that's the stuff. Yeah. You got to go back. All this stuff kind of blurs together. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of guys that Theo Davis with Wayne Morgan, who was going to be this big time guy that to come in. I think he ended up going to Gonzaga and then getting busted for doing mushrooms.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
not that there's anything wrong with that. But all right. Well, thanks again to our sponsor, HeartlandFlagpoles.com. Check them out. We will be back here next week. Actually, Rob, I think you might have to get another guest next week. I'm going to be gone until Thursday. We'll talk about that off air. So maybe you can get a special guest on here or Chris, or somebody can figure something out.
Yep.
Can jump in there. But have fun up there in Pro Day. Everybody be jumping on CycloneFanatic.com. As Rob and Jared and Chris and the whole gang, they do a tremendous job covering the Iowa State football program. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.